Wake up! Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. You are now listening to UMS30. I am your host, Dr. Joshua K. Wright. I realize that you could be anywhere in the world right now, but you're here listening to me, and I sincerely appreciate that. UMS30 is a new talk show airing on Sunday mornings. I'll be bringing you lively, thought-provoking discussion on a variety of topics. Each show will feature an extended conversation with the guests. While many of these individuals will come from the University of Maryland Eastern Shore and the local community, I will also feature several guests from around the country. Please note that the views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of 91.3, WESM, or the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. One of my roles as a full-time professor at UMES is to advise students on their academic careers. I often find myself serving more as a mentor and a life coach for many of them. One thing that's common amongst my students is that many are not taking proper care of themselves. Lack of sleep, lack of exercise, and poor diet and eating habits are regular problems. Today's episode is dedicated to the topic of self-care. My guest is Reverend Danielle Graham. Reverend Graham is a chaplain at the Penn Medicine Princeton Medical Center in New Jersey. She's a native of Hyattsville, Maryland, with a Master of Social Work from the University of Pittsburgh, and also a Master of Divinity degree and a graduate certificate in Urban Ministry from Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. Reverend Graham, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
About 3 months ago, I heard you give a compelling presentation on the topic of self-care. For listeners who may not be familiar with that concept, please take a few minutes to explain what it is.
Sure. Self-care is simply like the word says, it's caring for yourself, taking good care of yourself. And as I tend to talk about it, it's not just looking at physical health, but it should be care for your mental health, your emotional health, your spiritual health, all facets of who we are as human beings. And self-care can fall on the spectrum and include lots of different things as far as sleep, eating habits, some of the things you talked about in opening up. A lot of people don't realize all of those have to do with self-care and can affect your mental health, your physical health, your ability to function, and your ability to be successful in school and in career.
So it's interesting you say that. When I tell people that I sleep at least 6 hours a night or that I eat 3 meals a day, they look at me like I'm some oddball. You know, like I remember I was having this conversation with some buddies of mine, and it's like, dude, like, how do you sleep 6 hours? I can never do that. You know, like the popular belief is if you want to be successful, you should only sleep about 3 to 4 hours a night. I've heard some, you know, really famous entertainers say, well, you could sleep when you die. Like I go days without sleeping. It's what I've heard some entertainers say, you know, and then I've also heard people, you know, talk about they don't really eat regular meals. I remember I was, you know, I was actually dating somebody one time, a long time ago. And, you know, I was asking her, well, when was the last time you ate? And she's telling me, well, I don't even remember. Like, I think I forgot to eat anything the whole day other than maybe an energy bar. So I have a lot of college students, 18 to 21, who are adopting these habits from the time they come in as freshmen. So when they leave as seniors, you know, that's kind of ingrained in their system in terms of little sleep, you know, little proper diet, nutrition. In your professional opinion, how healthy are these habits?
These are not healthy habits, but it's funny you say that. That has become the norm. People assume that less sleep, you're going to be more productive, you're going to be able to climb the corporate ladder, you're going to be able to get more of your assignments done, and all of the things that we've created as a culture and a society to keep moving, to keep producing. You know, are you getting straight A's? Are you able to hit every deadline? Are you able to to hit all of these marks that show success. And the idea that is, if you're being lazy, quote unquote, and a part of being lazy sometimes is taking time out to sleep or eat properly, which the irony is when your health is declining, physical health as well as your mental health, one of the first things doctors or therapists will talk to you about is your sleeping and your eating habits. So it's ironic that we've developed this mindset that's driving us to say, I have to be more productive. I have to get all this done, so I'm going to sleep less. But then as soon as something goes wrong, the first question professionals are asking you, are you getting enough sleep? Are you eating properly? And the statistics actually show men need 7 to 8 hours and women need 8 to 9 hours for sufficient sleep. How many people actually get that a night?
But isn't there such a thing as too much sleep is not healthy for you, though?
Too much sleep is definitely not healthy for you. Too much of anything. I mean, life is about balance.
Uh-huh.
Too much of anything. If you get to the space where you are too much of a health fanatic, that actually is something they're looking at now as it pertains to eating disorders. Some people who become too obsessive and dogmatic about eating healthy and being so rigid that they now cut out things from their diet and become unhealthy. So too much of anything is unhealthy. But actually that 7 to 9 hours is the healthy window for men and women. But like you said, most folks don't get 7 to 9 hours a night.
Yeah, not at all. So where does time management come into this discussion on self-care? Because, you know, again, the idea is, if I'm sleeping, then I'm not being productive, or somebody's out there outworking me, you know? So how does time management factor in?
Time management is definitely a big part of it. It helps create balance. Time management helps you learn to prioritize things in a different way. And so one of the things is to recognize sometimes you are not optimal with less sleep. Although you are working more hours, it doesn't mean you're actually getting quality work. I think people have to kind of pay attention to those kind of things. Yeah, I might be awake and I might be trying to write this paper, or I might be working on this portfolio, but the work I produce, if I actually got more sleep, would be better quality than the work I'm producing on less sleep. And so time management becomes very essential, because on top of sleeping, if I'm not eating properly, not getting enough nutrition, not getting enough vegetables and fruit in my diet, not drinking enough fluids, then my brain is not going to function optimally either. My physical body is not going to function optimally. And so then you start actually being less productive than you are successful.
So like all things, self-care is a process, and it can't be achieved overnight. What are 5 basic steps that our listeners should take to begin this process?
Oh, that's a great question. 5 steps. I would say look at, one would be to check your sleeping habits. Are you sleeping sufficiently so that you can function? Are you able to stay awake? And some people, like, you know, like we've talked about, are used to sleeping less hours, but the moment they sit down and are quiet for 2 minutes, they're knocked out. That's a part of sleep deprivation. If it's hard for you to stay focused and to concentrate on things for long periods of time, it could be some issue with sleep deprivation. So considering what your sleep habits are like, what your pattern is like, are you even dealing with insomnia or the feeling that you don't need too much sleep? All of those things are not a healthy balance. I think a second one would be looking at your eating habits. We should be eating 3 to 5 meals a day. If you're eating 5 meals a day, it should be smaller, definitely healthier things, leaner portions. But what does your diet look like? How much are you eating? What are you taking in? Are you taking in all the nutrition? And if you are eating fewer meals, are you getting those supplements? Are you taking some kind of health supplement in the process so that you make sure that you get all the vitamins that you need for your system? So that would be a second one. I think a third one is checking your work-life balance. There has to be a work-life balance. If you're working, only studying, and you're never finding time for some social life, for exercise, for things that you enjoy, you're setting yourself up to, one, become isolated, but two, not to feel really a sense of worth and meaning in your life. It can't just be the pursuit of money. It can't just be the pursuit of good grades, but finding that balance, because we're people and we need connections with other people. And so finding how that works for you, even if you're an introvert, even if you, I have a friend that I work with that talks about she is an introvert, so she only deals with no more than a few people at a time. So even if it's not that you are very social, but just finding one or two people that you connect with and can do something other than talk about school or talk about work or your professional career. I think a fourth one would definitely be exercise. Not everybody has to be a gym rat. You could be doing something like just simply taking a walk 30 minutes a day or 20 minutes a day during your break at work, or finding ways to go be in nature. Maybe you like bike riding. Maybe you like running and jogging. Finding some ways to incorporate activity and exercise in your day would definitely be in your week is a great tool for self-care. And then finding ways to express yourself. How do you like to be creative? Some people love to be in nature. Some people love going fishing. Some people love drawing, even if they don't want to be a professional artist. Some people love coloring. That's been a big thing lately with self-care. They have adult coloring books. I find that I love coloring. I'll take a break for about 5 minutes, pull out. You can actually print some adult coloring sheets online. There are adult coloring books in like Five Below and lots of different stores. Just grab markers or crayons or colored pencils, whatever you prefer, and just take 5 minutes and do that. And you'd be surprised kind of how that lifts you and adds some joy or adds some color into your day. And those kind of things help give you self-care.
And then could we also throw in stuff like, you know, maybe listening to music or perhaps
definitely,
if you have
definitely music. They do a lot with music therapy. So, yeah music is a universal language.
And then
so it doesn't just have to be jazz. It could be R&B. It could be hip hop. It could be, you know, lots of different genres of music. So anything with the music, with the arts, whether it's dancing, yeah, the arts are definitely a rich way to add some self-care.
And I know for me, I have a pet. So my pet really helps me a lot in terms of de-stressing when I get home from work. Because, you know, no matter what type of day I had, that dog's not thinking about any of that. You know what I mean? So it's like he's always there wagging his tail and looking to lick my face. Yep. So that helps.
Yeah, so I have two cats, and it's the same thing for me. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because the hospital where I work, they have a program where they have service dogs who they bring into the patient rooms to help kind of cheer them up and give them some joy. So, yeah, pets have an amazing way of offering some sense of self-care as well, and sense of connection and kind of getting outside of your head and giving you balance, forcing you to think about something other than work or what you have to get done. Forcing you to kind of take a break because they'll want that attention.
and also one final thing on this topic. You know, I heard someone say that something simple as just like tidying up your home or your office space could help you, because they were saying like when everything is cluttered and junky, it's like your life feels cluttered and junky. But if you take time to like clean up your personal space, you know, that could help you a lot just in terms of, you know, your outlook. Is that true?
Actually, it is for some people.
Okay.
That's not true for everyone, but okay. Yeah, definitely for some people, the way your space looks reflects what's happening on you internally, what's happening mentally and emotionally. But sometimes if things are very cluttered, you have clothes everywhere, you got papers everywhere, it can be a reflection that, you know, you're feeling cluttered and overwhelmed internally and not being able to express that verbally. But so something as simple as cleaning up can do that, dusting. Some people do find relaxation in doing household chores and vacuuming and washing the dishes and doing laundry. Like, the little things can help with self-care. Simple things like ladies going to get a manicure or pedicure, you know, fellas getting a haircut. You'd be surprised at some of the little things that we do that sometimes people think is being vain, but it really is just taking care of yourself.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to You and Me at 30. Today's guest is Reverend Danielle Graham. She's the chaplain at the Penn Medicine Princeton Medical Center in New Jersey. And we have about 10 or 11 minutes left with Reverend Graham. And we've been talking a lot about self-care up to this point. Now, mental health awareness is just as important as proper sleep, exercise, diet, and stress management. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, problems with mental health are widespread in the U.S., with an estimated 50% of all Americans diagnosed with a mental illness or disorder at some point in their life. Mental illness such as depression are the third most common cause of hospitalization in the U.S. for those ages 18 to 44 years old, and adults living with serious mental illness die on average 25 years earlier than others. Reverend Graham, you're responsible for starting a mental health awareness group on Facebook, and you formerly headed a ministry at a church in Maryland that focused on mental health. Take just a minute just to kind of talk about that work you were doing either at the church or on social media.
The work with the church was a partnership. Metropolitan Baptist Church has a counseling ministry, and they have for well over 15, 20 years. They were one of the first churches in the Washington, D.C. area to start doing a counseling ministry and had their own separate counseling agency at one point. So I was privileged to be able to join in with their work, where they offer workshops around different difficult topics. We did a workshop not too long ago discussing suicide, suicide awareness and suicide prevention, and how the church can be supportive in that, and even how sometimes we turn a blind eye to those kinds of things, which is a part of why I started the group I did on Facebook. I started a online support group that's called Depressed in the Community of Faith. And this group was initiated to have conversations, those difficult conversations about mental health, about depression specifically, but mental health in general, suicide, and how that is affected by our faith views. So there are pastors on the site. There are those who are battling with mental illness. There are therapists who are connected to the site as well. And we share tips. We share testimonials. Sometimes we ask questions to dialogue back and forth to see where people are around those different things. But what I've come to experience is that the church has not always done well when it comes to mental health and how we talk about it, and how we talk about it in light of our faith and who God is and who we believe in the scriptures, believe about the scriptures, and the connections with all of those things.
Right. And you know, was there a personal experience that you had that kind of inspired you to do this work?
Yes. Personally, I started battling with depression. I started battling with major depression while I was in seminary. And it was a very strange encounter for me to go through that. I had always been somebody who was very supportive of others, caring for others, always encouraging others. And so when I was experiencing a space where I was down a lot or angry a lot, I was like, this is abnormal. I don't know what is happening to me. And I was feeling out of control emotionally and mentally, and ended up having to go to therapy and eventually having to be on medication. So processing all that with my faith while I was going through seminary, while I was already serving in ministry, like, how does all this work together? And who does God say I am? What does God say about it now? And then how do those who also believe in God treat me and interact with me? It's that cliche, well, just pray about it. Or don't claim that. And so those kind of things kept me stuck for a long time. and kept me questioning my own faith and who I believe God to be in my life. And so they were hard things that I had to learn to work through and really see where some of these thoughts and perceptions come from and what our real struggle is around talking about and being honest about mental illness. So many people are battling with depression, with anxiety. There are a lot of people who are dealing with bipolar disorder, and they have no idea, and they're suffering in silence. And I wanted to speak to that space of suffering in silence. You're not alone. There is help. God still loves you. You do have a purpose. You don't have to be someone who does not believe just because you go to therapy. All of those things is what my heart's desire is, to get the message out to people.
So you could definitely pray about it, but you need to mix prayer with medication, with therapy, is what you're saying.
Yes, okay. Yes. It's a combination, and finding the right combination for you. Okay. Definitely pray. Definitely read your word. Worship. Talk to your pastor or spiritual leader. But also, it's okay to seek counseling. I offer it in this kind of analogy. If someone's battling cancer, I'm going to pray that God offer healing, but I'm also going to encourage you to go to an oncologist. Right. And if they recommend that you go for chemotherapy and radiation, I'm going to suggest you consider that. And it doesn't mean you lack your faith. It doesn't mean you're not a prayer warrior if you do that in addition to praying.
Hmm. You know, I think mental illness for a long time has really gotten a bad representation in the media. You know, obviously when you turn on the news today, we hear another mass shooting occurred, and usually they say the person was dealing with mental health issues. You know, and then we also see some of our favorite celebrities, right? You know, be it the singers, be it the athletes, who, you know, say they're struggling with mental health issues after something bad happens to them, or they get caught doing something. Do you believe that, like, a lot of times people use mental health as an excuse to get away with bad behavior?
I think sometimes it's used as an excuse. More often, I think the assessment of someone's behavior that we cannot understand can get labeled as mental health. Mm-hmm. Because mental health is still such a taboo. It's still a space that the masses don't understand what it means to live with depression. Depression is not just sadness. The masses don't understand what it means to live with anxiety. People will tell you, well, just don't worry about that. Don't think about that, and you'll be fine. That's not the case for someone who lives with an anxiety disorder. Someone who is experiencing depression, they can't just go and laugh and be happy, and then the depression's all of a sudden gone. Because we have such a lack of knowledge and understanding about what these mental health disorders look like and what it means to live with them day in and day out, we can make blanket statements and make assumptions. Not everyone who deals with mental health, even severe mental health, is homicidal or violent to others. That's a bad label that mental health receives. So we have to become more educated. We have to speak about it in more honest and open ways.
I was recently reading the book Shook One, Anxiety Playing Tricks on Me, by radio host Charlamagne Tha God, who sees a therapist once a week, and he is a big advocate for mental health. So Charlamagne talks about there being a stigma in the African-American community to seek therapy. You know, most people would rather go talk to a pastor or pray than go sit down on somebody's couch, right? And, you know, I know from firsthand experience that many of my Black students at UMES refuse to go to the counseling center on campus, when I recommend that they speak to someone, just because they say they don't feel comfortable, or they'll do it once, say it didn't really work for me, and then they'll never go back. Now, Charlamagne also believes that many Blacks are suffering from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, due to the generational impact of slavery, Jim Crow, and more contemporary problems in the Black community, like poverty, discrimination, police brutality, police shootings, and, you know, Black-on-Black violence in neighborhoods. And as a result, you have all of these kids, and, you know, he comes from the hip-hop community, so you have, like, these young rappers who are making songs about getting high and popping prescription pills because they're self-medicating to ease their pain, right? So my question for you is, do you believe that race, and I guess we could throw class in there as well, is a factor when it comes to mental health?
It absolutely is. The statistics show us that. NAMI, National Alliance for Mental Illness, they offer a lot of statistics about mental health. And one of the things they say is that 60% of adults receive mental health services, those who have mental health diagnosis. But out of that, African-American and Hispanics utilize mental health services at half the rate of Caucasians. And so the stats are showing that people of minority communities don't utilize mental health services at the same rate as our Caucasian counterparts. But we are not any less affected by mental health. And so that's staggering to think that if, you know, one in five people will experience some kind of mental illness within the United States, and, you know, not even half of those people are getting help, you have a lot of people suffering, and suffering unnecessarily. There is help. There is support. There was actually recently I watched a clip, the Red Table Talk that that Jada Pinkett Smith offers on Facebook. She did an interview with Kid Cudi, and he was talking about his experience with depression and masking his depression and his anxiety by using drugs. That often becomes most people's way of coping. People will turn to drugs, they'll turn to alcohol, they'll turn to sex, and not realize this pattern of destructive behavior is their way of trying to cope with something that can be cared for. Some disorders cannot be cured, but there is treatment where you can live a better quality of life. And so therapy, I try to explain to people, is a process. Just like any relationship, you have to find a therapist that matches for you. You have to understand their way of offering therapy. Does that match your personality and what's going to be effective for you? There's some therapists that will just listen to you talk and hope that you talk your way into your own healing and your own understanding of self. That's not something that worked for me. I needed a therapist that was going to be able to listen, but also at times be able to offer me support and tools and feedback as to how I can overcome some of the challenges I was facing. And so there is that dynamic where it takes some time to find a therapist that works for you. And so people get discouraged. They go to one session and they were like, well, I didn't like it, or I didn't like that person. I didn't like what they addressed with me. And so then they say, I'm never going because it never works.
Right.
And but that's the same way with a doctor. If you get to a doctor that you don't like, usually if you get sick again, you're going to at least try to find another doctor, right?
Yeah, no.
We don't say all doctors don't work.
Yeah. And, you know, Danielle, it's funny that you had brought up Kid Cudi a minute ago. And I think about, you know, Kid Cudi and Kanye West, they have a close relationship and they did an album together last summer. Yeah. And Kanye, you know, supposedly was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, but you know, he said in you know, live interviews how, you know, when he was asked if he sees a therapist, he says no, because he says the world is his therapist and he could get more out of just talking to his friends and people he knows and going to a stranger. And then he also says that, you know, he's been off his meds, his medication for like the last 6 months because it keeps him from being creative when he's in the studio making his music and doing his fashion. So, I mean, like, you know, what do you say to somebody like that who's saying that the medicine is keeping me from being productive, or I get more out of talking to my friends and family than I do a professional doctor who doesn't really know me?
So that's so multifaceted. But one of the things when it comes to medication, I will say, is I think a lot of people don't talk to the psychiatrist or their doctor about the effects, the side effects of the medication. Mm-hmm. Not every medication works for every person. And so if the doctor is just generically providing an antidepressant or a medicine that deals with anxiety, then it may not be the same script that's going to work for you. And so you have to be able to communicate, well, this is what's happening. You know, example, going back to the therapist and saying, I find that I'm less creative when I'm on this medication. I find that Jada Pinkett actually talked about she had been placed on a medication because she was dealing with depression, and it started affecting her sex drive. And so she took herself off the medication. Like, all of those little life things that are affecting, being affected by your medication, those are the things you have to talk to your doctor about, because then they can try to prescribe you something else that would be more effective for you. And I think a lot of people don't know that dynamic of dealing with psych medications. That this medication might work for this person, but that might not be the one that works for you. Doesn't mean no medication works for you. It means I have to find the one that really works for my system, works for my set of disorders, works for what my lifestyle is, and all of those different pieces. And you have to be willing to talk to your doctor about all of those things in your life to really get to what you need to help you. And then that space of people talking about, I can just talk to my friends, I can just talk to my family, I can talk to my significant other. Would you talk to your significant other if you got diagnosed with diabetes? Would you just talk to your family if they said, oh, you got cancer?
Yeah.
Those are chronic health disorders that you need someone to help and support you with that is a professional in that area. The same thing with mental health. If you're dealing with anxiety, if you're dealing with depression, the chronic health disorder that talking to a therapist, a licensed therapist or counselor who's trained to deal with those things can help you with. Yes, we need family support even when we're physically sick. We need the support of our loved ones, but they cannot give you all of the clinical and professional help that's going to help you really truly have a better quality of life if you're really suffering from those things.
And just to follow up on a previous response you gave, you were saying that Blacks and Latinos tend to seek mental health services at much lower rates than Caucasians. Is that because of class, or is that more of a stigma about mental health in those communities?
It's a combination of things. They found some of it is the stigma within the communities, especially, you know, both of those communities are really big about their faith, whether it's Catholic or they are Protestant. So they're very big on going to their priest or to their pastor for seeking help and relief when it comes to mental health or emotional distress. That's one issue. The other dynamic definitely is related to class. People, minority communities have less access to mental health services, or they don't, if there is access in their area, they may not have the insurance necessary to cover seeing a mental health professional. And so people don't know the options for resources. There are several clinics that offer sliding scale payment options. There are churches that offer clinical counseling services like Metropolitan Baptist that have professional licensed therapists that are connected to that church and community and congregation, that they may have paraprofessionals. And so there are options to seeking help and to getting services, but definitely in minority communities there are more obstacles to getting to those services, and it is definitely class-related.
So, Reverend Graham, we are out of time. Is there any way that our listeners can contact you if they want some information, or is there a website that you would recommend for them to look at if they can't reach you personally?
Definitely, if you want to reach me, I'm on Facebook, just under my name, Danielle Graham. Definitely a good resource would be the National Alliance of Mental Illness, NAMI. They're a great informational resource. If someone you know or yourself is dealing with suicidal thoughts, you can always contact the National Suicide Hotline, which is 1-800-273-8255. They are always available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, holidays as well. And then there are ways for our communities to get more information and to get help. There is a program where you can get certified as a mental health first responder. And so there's lots of resources out there for information, for support groups, and to learn more.
Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, now I'll talk to you soon.
Have a great day.
We end each show with a segment called Parting Shots. Here's when I give my thoughts on something happening in the news, pop culture, or life in general that's piqued my interest. Comedy is a coping mechanism for many individuals dealing with mental health issues. For Richard Pryor, comedy was therapeutic. He used the stage in the same manner as a therapist would use a couch. After days of freebasing cocaine, Pryor poured rum all over his body and lit himself on fire. That nearly suicidal experience resulted in one of the best stand-up performances of his career. Comedians Robin Williams and John Belushi struggled with depression, drug addiction, and suicide, yet they were two of the funniest people ever to grace the earth. Which makes me wonder how a person could be funny and appear happy while facing so much pain and sadness in their life. Again, ladies and gentlemen, please, if you are dealing with mental health issues, use those services that Reverend Graham provided, the National Suicide Hotline, NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Health Illness. Please take this seriously. And if you are seeking therapy, like she said, continue to see your therapist, continue to use your medication. And that's our show for the week. Thanks again to our guest, Reverend Daniel Graham. We do this every Sunday at 10:30 a.m. If you like the show, please tell your friends about it. Like us on Facebook and social media. A special shout out, as always, to Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv. Have a blessed day.